beast shall be the fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all the kingdoms, and shall devour all the earth, and shall trample it down and crush it. And he shall, the ten horns, and the ten horns out of the kingdom are ten kings. They shall rise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be different from the first, and he shall humble three kings. Verse 25, and he shall speak commands against the Most High, and he shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and he intends to change times and law, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times one half time. But what you want to focus on there is the middle sentence there. He intends to change times and law. And there have been changes over time, and I'd like to give, just point out a few of them. The Julian calendar was the first calendar that was actually published, in a wide area over the Roman Empire, and it was published in 45 B.C. And they began the year, or started to start the year at that time on January the 1st. On January the 1st, up until that time, it had been started at the vernal equinox in the spring. Well, in around A.D. 150, the Christian churches decided to take over the pagan festival of Saturnalia. Sun worship, or the winter solstice, and celebrate the 25th of December as the Messiah's birthday. We know that's wrong. Later on, there was a cult of the Virgin Mary became popular, and it was thought that the Christian era should start on the day of Christ's conception, or Messiah's conception. That is 9 months earlier, on March 25th. So everybody began to keep March the 25th as the first day of the year. And the year ended on March 24th and began on March 25th. That's when the dates changed. In 1582, the Gregorian calendar was developed to correct some mistakes in timing on the Julian calendar. And at that time, they went back to keeping starting the year on January the 1st. So you see some changes here. And most of the Catholic-dominated nations changed at that time in 1582. They also had to make some corrections in the dates, because the Julian calendar was short and they had to make up like 10 days for a correction, and we'll get into that later. The United States and Great Britain didn't make the changes until 1751, 52, and actually Turkey was the last nation to change over to the Gregorian calendar in 1927. So you can see the changes have been going on for a long time, and there's lots of confusion been added in by our good friends Ha-Satan. And just a little bit of detail. In 1751-52, the United States and Great Britain decided to change over to the Gregorian calendar. Well, they did it in steps, and they had to drop 11 days at that time because there had been because the difference in the Julian calendar and the actual lunar or solar calendar was so far off. So, in September 1952. They dropped 11 days in September the, I forget the dates right now, I think it was September the 11th of 1752, was followed by September the 22nd of 1752. And just a little record of the changes in 1752, December the 31st, 1750, was followed by January the 1st, 1750. So they had made the changes over to starting the year at that time. March 24th of 1750 was followed by March 25th, 1751. So they were still changing or starting the year pretty close to the vernal equinox. And December the 31st, 1751 was followed by January the 1752, January 1st. And then that's when all the nations, except for just a few minor ones, changed over to the Gregorian calendar, and we were all back on that same schedule. But it's not Yahweh's calendar. It's not Yahweh's calendar. We also, in Daniel 2:20, verse 20 and 21, I'd like to make the point that the calendar is up to Yahweh. The changes. Daniel 2, verse 20 and 21. And Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of Elohim forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He causes kings to pass away, and he sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who know understanding." So the calendar, the true changes are up to Yahweh. What we need to remember is, because of the time period we've been brought up in, y'all pay attention to my high-tech prop here. We're used to thinking in the Roman way of thinking, or the Greekish way of thinking. And we think in linear. But Yahweh's way of thinking is in the circular, in cycles, in circuits, and in periodic time sequences. So let me put this together. So, because I want to make a statement here. If you're not thinking in cyclical terms according to what Yahweh does, then you have a wrong way of thinking. Because everything that Yahweh does is in a cycle. Just think about it. Our day begins when? At sunset. It begins at sunset. It ends at sunset. It's instant in time. Our week ends at sunset after a seven-day period, on Sabbath. It ends at sunset. The next day begins at sunset. It's a cycle. The month begins in an instant of time at the conjunction, which I'll try to point out later why. But it ends at that instant of time when it crosses between the earth and the sun. It's called conjunction. It changes from the old moon, from the waning moon, to the new waxing moon, new rebuilding moon. In an instant of time. It's a cycle. It continues time and again. Time and again. The year ends and begins at the vernal equinox. You look in the scripture, there's only two seasons. Yahweh only gave two seasons. Monique made that plain today. Summer and winter. Winter and summer. It's cyclical. And we know from Moses, when he received instructions in Exodus, Yahweh said, Abib, this will be your first. He didn't say Abib. He said, this will be your first of months. Now, would he begin the first of months in the old year? Wouldn't he begin the first months in the new year? Would you start a count in the old year? You certainly wouldn't, or I wouldn't anyway. Think of there's also another sequence or another cycle that's called a precession of the equinox. We're not too concerned with it, but we do have to pay attention to it because it's significant to the beginning of the year. And the precession of the equinoxes, the constellations over the earth, and they rotate. And it's a very slow process. It's only one revolution every 26,000 years, 25,920 years. Everything that Yahweh deals with is a revolution. Our earth is rotating, spinning at the rate of one revolution per day. The moon is rotating about the earth. It's a cycle. At one lunation, every 29 days, on average, 29 days, or 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 2.93 seconds. But that's an average. It can vary anywhere from 29 days, 6.5 hours, to 29 days and 20 hours. And that's why some months are longer than others, because it's a longer lunation period. And also, pay attention to my high-tech... props here. Of course, you can tell this is Earth because it's beautiful blue in color, and this is a mozzarella cheese moon here. So, if you think about it, let's talk about eclipses just for a moment. What is an eclipse? It's when two vast bodies pass, or a body passes between two other bodies. So, let's think of the window as being the sun, and the moon passes between the earth and the sun. What do we get? That's when we get an eclipse at that point. That's called a solar eclipse. A lunar eclipse is when the moon passes around the earth, and the earth is between the sun and the moon. And you think about it, the only time that you can have an eclipse of the moon is on a full moon. The only time you can have an eclipse of the sun is on a new moon, a conjunction. It's two definite points in time that Yahweh has given us. The problem being is a lot of people want to use the crescent. Well, what is a crescent? First thing, it's a symbol of Islam. It's a symbol of Isis and Diana and of the Virgin Mary that the Catholics worship. And it's is not a periodic sequence of events, because it can start, it's not standard, what I want to say, it can start, or you first sighting of it can be anywhere from 15 to 72 hours after the actual conjunction. That is not a regular sequence of events, because it varies. It's not normal. It's not according to God's plan. It's not a set sequence of events. Another reason we use the conjunction is because, as Don has spoken before, Yahweh begins time in the darkness. You think about back in creation. when Yahweh overshadowed the earth, he said the earth was null and void. It was in bohu and tohu. It was without light. That's one of the first things he did, was create lights for the earth so you could see it. Our plant life all begins in darkness. You bury it in the ground. We don't see it sprout. But we do see the results of that sprouting several days later. The plant's alive when it sprouts. But we see the results, the plant that comes out of the ground later. Life begins in darkness. A baby begins in darkness. It's in his mother's womb until through its gestation period for 9 months. It begins its life in darkness. To continue that pattern, think about it. Yeshua came to the world in darkness as an unknown. He wasn't accepted with the world. And he was called many names. The second time Yeshua comes will be in darkness on the first day of the seventh month at conjunction when there's no light. And he won't be accepted that time either. So there's a sequence of events that Yahweh sets up, and he's consistent in it. Consistent. Let's see, a crescent moon. It is part of the lunar cycle, but it does not have a definite periodic starting point. It's pagan. It's worshipped by the pagans. And it's when that's Yahweh told us not to worship those pagan things. In Jeremiah, the scripture that talks about the gathering up the Egyptian tires, which are actually moon symbols, because the Midianites worshipped the moon. And okay, equinox. The equinox, we know, and we've learned from Monique today, that the equinox begins, the vernal equinox is March 21st normally, but it can vary anywhere from March 19th through the 21st. I think even 22nd. But that's because of the precession of the equinox. It's because of you lose a day or losing time through the first 3 days of the 4-year period before we have a leap year period. And then on a leap year, that's caught back up, and it moves the equinox forward again. Also, the autumnal equinox is September the 23rd. So where my high-tech prop go? Here we go. If we use this joint here. If we use this joint here as the first day of the year, or of the vernal equinox, the beginning of Yahweh's year, and we travel around through the year, winter would begin over here on the other side. It's actually a little bit, summer's actually a little bit longer than winter, but it's not that much difference. So does it not make sense, and that's one of the points Don was just making, pointing out a while ago, does it not make sense that your year begins here, and your count for the months would begin later? You know, when the vernal equinox begins summer, the autumnal equinox begins winter, it begins your seasons, but it does not begin the calendar count. To begin the calendar count, you have to wait until the first conjunction after the vernal equinox and then begin your count. It can happen on the same day. In AD 30, if you go to NASA Observatory, I think it is, the U.S. Naval Observatory, that's one of the things that they have posted, and it's called the, I forget the term for it, but it's an oddity of the calendar, in that both those days, the vernal equinox and the current conjunction happened on the same day. Actually, conjunction happened a couple of hours ahead of the vernal equinox, but they both happened after sunset, but they both happened on that same day. I suspect before Yeshua returns, that's probably going to happen again. Now, get back to starting the year. Does it make sense if your year, you still have a few days left in the old year, does it make sense to begin your calendar at that time for the new year? Does it make any sense at all? It doesn't. You would wait until the next year. The thing is, you don't have to calculate intercalation of a new month. Because if you just watch and see when the old or the 12th month ends in the year that you're in, if it ends before the vernal equinox, you know you have to add in another month to get into the new year so you can start your new year count. It's very simplistic. You always set it up. We don't have to go out and hunt for barley. We don't have to go out and count the days here, there, and yonder, or whatever. It's set up. If the 12th month ends before the vernal equinox, you enter Calate a month. If it happens after, then you continue your count as soon as it's over. You start your count of the first next 12 months. Very simplistic. I think that's one of the biggest problems that we have. We've taken something that Yahweh has created and set up and given us definition for, and then we try to add in things to create problems. They do create problems. We may not add them in to create problems, but they do create problems. Barley, for instance. Barley is needed, certainly, for the wave sheaf offering or the wave omer offering. But if you wait until the proper time, if you wait and start your year at the proper time, after the vernal equinox, Yahweh will make the barley available. He provides all our needs. If you try to start it early and you're out here hunting around for a handful of barley, which is a mistranslation of what the word says anyway, there's a word, perfect word in Hebrew for a handful of grain like we envision when we talk about the wave sheaf offering. The wave omer offering is actually a 2-liter, or about 2-liter container of dried grain, ready prepared, ready to be eaten. Let's backtrack just a little bit and talk about the Leviticus 23. Let's make one stop first in Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16. And this is the one verse that most people hang their hat on, saying that you can't begin the harvest until you present the wave sheaf offering to the priest. And that's one of the things Monique was talking about today, about they went out with a sickle, and everybody gathered around as a big ceremony, and he said, with this sickle, and the people said, yeah, with that sickle. And I think he asked it 3 times, really. And then he said, with this wheat, and they said, yeah, that wheat. And he said, I'll cut, and they said, I'll cut, you know, and he cut it off, and that was what they called a wave sheaf. It's not scriptural. It just isn't scriptural. But they hang their hat on that whole thing. They say that you can't begin your harvest until that time. Well, those of you who've grown up on a farm know that's foolish, because the grain, when it's ripe, it needs to be cut off a stalk within a certain time period, or the grain will start falling out of the boot or out of the husk and onto the ground. So you need to cut that, harvest that in a certain period of time. I remember when I was a child, we had a large wheat field up beside our house, and I remember my dad going out there with a cradle, hand cradle, helping the other guys cut wheat. And they would go around. All the areas weren't ripe. They were low areas where it was wet and the grain was still green. There were hillsides where the sun hadn't hit on it. They were still green. But they would harvest around those areas. And by the time they finished the field, they'd come back and be several days later. Those areas would be ripe. So they harvested as it became ripe. Let's turn over to Leviticus 23 now. Leviticus 23. And we'll look at verse 14. I think Monique made this point today, but I'd like for you to go over it. Verse 14, Leviticus 23, said, you shall not eat bread, nor roasted grain, nor fresh ears, until this same day, until you have brought the offering of your Elohim. It is a never-ending statute throughout your generations and all your dwellings. So what it's saying is you can't eat that grain. Let's think about it, moms. When y'all made cookies for your kids, you put the flour and all the ingredients together, and you mixed up the dough, and then you put the dough on the sheet, and you baked it, and you brought out, you had cookies. And the children came in, Mama, Mama, I want a cookie. We say, okay, you can have cookies, but you got to do your chores first. You got to go out and mow the yard, feed the chickens, whatever, carry the trash out, whatever. Then you got to come in and eat your supper. You got to clean up everything on your plate. And then you can have a cookie. Well, that's exactly what Yahweh's saying there, right here. The cookies are made. The wheat's been harvested. It's there. It's available. But you can't partake of it until you bring that offering to Yahweh. It's very simplistic. The grain's available. It's been harvested. Like just a few verses, it tells you. Verse 9. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel. You shall say to them, when you come into the land which I am giving to you, and have reaped its harvest, and have brought in the wave sheaf at the beginning of your harvest to the priest." So it's giving you a sequence of events there. You're brought into the land, you reap the harvest, and then you bring in the wave offering, the omer, to the priest. And you can't get a 2-liter amount of grain out of a handful of wheat. it just won't happen. You can try it all you want to. You've got to have a significant harvest, and then you've got to thresh it, and then you've got to separate it from the chaff, and then you've got to gather the grain in. And that was the prime grain. And all it says here is that you bring a portion, an offering, from that first cutting of the grains. Not go out and cut one little specific clump of grain and then call that your way sheep offering. So Yahweh has set a sequence of events in place. And I, So let's go over a little bit what we've learned here, or what I'll try to present to you. Yahweh works in cycles. In everything, He works in cycles. The cycle for the year is not only the sun, it's a combination of the sun and the moon. It's called a solar lunar. The solar, when the solar ends, that would be the vernal equinox. Then you look to the moon and see whether you have a conjunction at that time or whether it's later. If it's in the middle of the month, you can't start the yearly count or the lunar count for the next year. You have to wait until that month plays out and it's ended. The crescent is pagan, pure and simple. If you do a study on it, I can't believe that you would come up with a different conclusion. It's pagan. And it's moon worship. It's taught against several times in Scripture, and there's no way you can get around that, I don't believe. The conjunction is a set point in time. It's cyclical. It's periodic. And it's a perfect indication of when Yahweh would have us begin our months. I was speaking with Don the other night, and two or three of you witnessed, and Don may have taught this, he may have said this to me before, I don't know, I don't remember it. But while I was preparing this message, it dawned on me, you know what? We know from Genesis that the months were 30 days long. In Genesis 7 and 8, I think it talks about the different months. And anyway, that's a five-month period there that equals 150 days. So that gives you 30 days per month. We know that Jerusalem is the center of the earth to Yahweh. We know this is where His throne is. This is where He's placed His name. So it would not make sense that all of Yahweh's cycles, all of His heavenly bodies, would be in a regular periodic sequence. We know that time changed somewhere around the eighth century because you can look around a little bit and find that most of the calendars were thrown away in the eastern countries because they didn't work anymore. Their 30-day months, 12-month years did not work. So they threw those calendars away and had to go to calculating. Does it not make sense that Yahweh would give Israelis a sign of when to begin the month? And it, like I say, Don may have taught this to me and I just forgot it, I don't know. But I realized it the other day. Can you not imagine that when at the end of the month, when the waning moon is going around the earth and it's going behind the earth, and you're seeing the last segment of the waning moon, that last day, when the sun's rising and the waning moon is falling, that there would be an eclipse. Think about it. It didn't have to be a total eclipse, but just a partial eclipse. It would be a sign. That's one of the word definitions for the sign in Genesis 1:14 through 16 is a miraculous sign, a banner in the sky. What better sign could Yahweh give on that last day of the old month to have an eclipse of the sun by the moon? The people would see it. It's okay, sunset is the first day of our new month. Is it possible? Sure it is. Is it probable? I think so. Is that a fact? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But Yahweh sets definite times and seasons and cycles and situations in place, and He follows through with them. Yahweh doesn't change. It's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I believe that there's no doubt in my mind, I may not have proven it, but there's no doubt in my mind that the equinox is the beginning of the new year, of the new changing of the seasons and the beginning of the new year, but not the calendar count. Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room. The word Tekufa. Many people deny that it means equinox. Many of your Hebrew scholars say that it does mean equinox. You have many messianics who say that it does and it doesn't. But, and let's look at Exodus 34. Exodus 34, verse 22. And you shall observe a feast of weeks for yourselves, the first fruits of the harvest of wheat. We're talking about Shavuot here, at the 7-week count. Also, the feast of ingathering at the turn of the year. Now, is it talking about turn of the new year, from the old year to the new year? Or is it talking about the turn of the seasons, from summer to winter? There's also a scripture in I think it's, let's look at chapter 23, verse 16. I don't think that's the scripture I want, but we'll look at that. Chapter 23, Exodus 20, chapter 23, verse 16. It says, also the feast of harvest, the first fruits of your labor, of what you sow in the fields, also the feast of ingathering at the going out of the year, at your gathering your work from the fields. So there's two harvests, the early harvest and the late harvest. And the harvest season would be over. That'd be the ending of the harvest season, but it's still the change of the seasons. And it would be equinox, the autumnal equinox, and the Tekufa would be the same thing. And it's like Bob was saying this afternoon, you ask any Israeli or any Israeli scholar and ask them, say equinox, and they'll say Tekufa. They know, they understand that it means the same thing. That's one of the big problems that we're having now in the counter count. People don't want to admit that Tekufa and equinox mean the same thing. It's the same word. It means the same thing. So I don't know anything else I can add to this. I pray that this has helped you somewhat. I don't know if I feel like everything, most everything I've given you is redundant from what you heard from Monique today. So I pray that it'll be helpful to you. And thank you.
Thank you, Paige. Maybe just to add one or two points on the subject when we're talking about the start of the month. Because again, like I said, I've always had a very functional mind in thinking everything has to have meaning. It has to lead somewhere. And several times I don't claim to be a scholar on the calendar issue, although I've studied it now for probably close to 20 years. But when I came to Israel, I'm the type of person, I've been in business for myself many times, I always said, I don't have to be an expert to go into business, but I'll hire someone who's an expert. So when I came here, I said, since I'm not an expert in the calendar, let me talk to the experts. And I went in not to say a word to them, just listen to them, and if they can convince me, then I would change. And I actually, honestly, went into every meeting saying, if they can convince me that you start the month by a crescent moon, then I'll start doing it immediately. And every meeting I went into actually was the opposite. Instead of convincing me that it starts by the crescent moon, and one of them was the Karaite leader that I met, and he was telling me that some people believe the Psalm 81:3, blow the trumpet in the new moon, on the full moon, on your feast day. And the word kesei, you know, some people believe it comes from covered moon, and some people believe it's blow the trumpet on the new moon, on the covered moon, meaning the Feast of Trumpets. And he said, but that's not true. That's not according to Hebrew. And he seems to know Hebrew, so I took him at his word. And he said, that psalm, like many psalms, are written in Hebrew syntax. Black, white, male, female, opposites. So I said, so you're saying, blow the trumpet on the new moon, on the full moon, on your feast day, then the new moon is the opposite of the full moon. He said, exactly. I said, you just proved it's got to be conjunction. The conjunction is the exact opposite. If you have a full pie, what is the opposite of a full pie? No pie.
No pie.
No pie. And then he said, no, you can't take it that way. And I said, you just told me to take it that way. And I noticed that the scholars do have an axe to grind. To me, I don't. You know, I started out going by this little pocket calendar. I found out that was wrong. And I learned about the crescent. I was keeping the crescent for several years until I figured out that was wrong and then started going by conjunction. I just want to do it as biblically correct. It really doesn't matter what it is. And it doesn't matter to me if I have to change. I don't have a reputation. I'm trying to hold back. If whatever is correct is correct. Even someone, one of our internationals congregation said, how do we explain to the brethren if we were doing something one way and now we're doing it another way? Explain that actually we're human and we're willing to change and admit when we're wrong. And that's the reason I believe that Congregation of Yahweh Jerusalem has the most sound doctrine that I've seen anywhere in the world. I stand by that. Because we've changed when we've seen that we've been biblically wrong. And I don't see a lot of other congregations doing that. I've talked to men that you talk to them and they just won't see it. The other thing is, if you're going by a visual sighting, then you have to decide two things. Do you go by a local sighting in your area that you're locally sighting the crescent, or do you go by the sighting in Jerusalem? Most people will admit you have to go by Jerusalem because when you enter the land, this is where the holy days are. Now, if you go by a local sighting, and we did it when we first started doing it, you can have up to 3 different holy days. I was a pastor in Pennsylvania and a pastor in New Jersey, and the new moon was falling right on the equinox. New Jersey saw the crescent, Pennsylvania didn't. My 2 congregations had the feast a month apart. I said, this isn't right. This is crazy. There's no way that Yahweh has 2 or 3 feast days. So local sighting wouldn't work. So then most people say, okay, you got to go by Jerusalem. Well, the next question is, are the holy days part of Yahweh's plan of salvation? Of course they are. Well, if we're going by a visual sighting of a crescent in Jerusalem to start the month, before modern times, how would we have started our month? How in the Philippines would you have known when somebody saw a crescent moon in Jerusalem? How would you know in North America? You couldn't. So how would we keep the Passover? Yeshua told us to keep this Passover as a memorial. You know, and it's renewing your covenant relationship. You have to do it. So how could you do it if you have to cite a crescent? How, even if there was someone here to cite it, how would they let you know in time to do it? And it just didn't make sense. You know, blow the trumpet in the new moon, on the full moon, on your feast day. And like I said, when the feast started, just go on the moon. Don't believe me. Go on the roof, rather, not the moon. I don't want you to go on the moon. Go on the roof and look. Was it a full moon or wasn't it a full moon? And it's so simple. Hebrews 11. Faith is the evidence of things not seen. We don't have to cite, like Paige said, a pagan crescent to know that there's a new month. It's the evidence of things not seen. Why? So that we know the worlds were framed by things that didn't come out of things that already appeared. What came first, the chicken or the egg? You know, Yahweh works in patterns. Things start in darkness. The world started in darkness. Let there be light. The day starts in darkness. Do you have to sight the sun to know the day starts? No, it's the absence of the sun. And I say, the Father says he will tempt no man, right? Yahweh tempts no man? Well, the Israelites coming into the land, I mean, they just went through the golden calf. Can you imagine? They saw the 10 miracles, the parting of the Red Sea, and Moses runs up to get the commandments, and they're down here having a wild party with a golden calf. Do you honestly think that the Father would send them into the land of Canaan, a vile pagan place where they were already moon worshippers, and tell them every month to go out and sight the moon? It's like telling an alcoholic, here's a bottle of whiskey, but don't drink it. You know, we have to think functional, you know, logical. And again, there is no historical record that before the Babylonian captivity that there was ever moon sighting here in Israel. They're just, it's not, you know. So these are some of the things, like I say, I just tell people, search it out for yourself because Passover is very important. And you have to be convicted in your heart that you're doing it on the right day. You know, and now in the age we're living in, there's a lot of information and a lot of things you can study, and you have to be convicted because it's an extremely important thing. So I pray that today was a blessing to you to go and understand the land. I love it. I love it when I can see things that connect the land to the Bible, because that's our inheritance. You know, and I say, yes, are we in the new covenant? Absolutely. You know, Yeshua died. His blood brings us into it. But the fullness of the new covenant you cannot experience until you're in the land. Because most of the blessings of the new covenant are in the land. You know, read the blessings of Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26. They all have to do with rain in due season, harvest time, wine, oil, figs. It's all about being blessed here in the land. And that's what the Father's doing. First, he's physically restoring the physical nation of Israel. He's brought Judah back, he's bringing Ephraim back. Then Yeshua returns to the earth, and then what happens? And then the land will bless us. And that's what it's all about. You know, and the whole cycle will repeat itself. So I think it's a blessing that we can see it. It's a blessing that we're here. And I will end right there. It's 4 o'clock. We had a shortened service today, but because of the program, we had it work that way. So there's a couple, there's a couple meetings that we're going to have when we're done. Please remember that. Petra's going to have the skirts for the ladies that want them. Dinner at 5:30. And Ephraim, did you have a question? Yes.
I'm so thankful for the lecture this morning. I have one question I was about to ask. It's about the new moon day. Because we experienced this year, there was a time where the lunar conjunction, Israeli time, happened sometime at 1 p.m.
Yes.
But then in the Philippines, it was around 6:20 p.m. So if we go by the teaching that whatever at that time the lunar conjunction happens, that begins the new moon. So in the Philippines, we cannot begin because at sunset, it was still not yet the lunar conjunction. It was, the sunset was at 6 p.m.
Yes.
With the lunar conjunction at 6:18. So it's 18 minutes after the sunset. Now, in Israel, it happened 1 p.m.
Yes.
So at sunset of that day, we can begin the new moon.
Yes.
But since in the Philippines, it happened after sunset, does it mean we have to begin the following sunset? If the answer is yes, that means there are two new moon days. One for Israel, another for the Philippines.
Actually, this is another problem that I need to talk to you about with the Philippines, but we're not going to get it into here. We've talked about it before because it's a little complicated. But the new moon is very simple. Wherever the new moon happens, and I believe, like Paige said, logic tells you if the holy days were meant to Israel, when there were 12 30-day months, it would be sunset in conjunction right here in Jerusalem. And then 24 hours would go around, and then the day. So it's the same now. Wherever sunset is at conjunction. Because right now there's sunset somewhere on the earth. You know. So if conjunction was happening right now, wherever that sunset is, that's the beginning of the month. And then you just wait 24 hours, the month will come to wherever you are. So that's no matter where you are on the earth, that's going to be the same, plan or the same.
The problem though was like this. You saying that specific example I gave.
Yes.
That means in Israel they have the new moon day of September 9, because it had the lunar conjunction happened at 12 something or 1 p.m. of September 8.
Yes.
So at sunset of that day begins September 9.
Okay.
It's the new moon day for Israel.
Yes.
But in the Philippines, the lunar conjunction happened at 6:18 p.m.
I know exactly what you say, but let me explain. The problem has nothing to do with the new moon. The problem has to do with a man-made international date line. This is the problem. You see, if the beginning of the time period is here in Jerusalem, if Jerusalem is the center of the earth, and what does the sun do? The sun goes around the earth, right? So now when you get to California, that's not the beginning of a new day, that's the end of the day. And literally, it should go through the Pacific. Well, man made an international dateline in the middle Pacific Ocean, but that's not biblical. We talked about it with some of the elders before, and I said, right now I don't want to throw it on you guys, but we need to have a meeting and discuss it.